What's up, my family? Welcome to Brother From Another on a Monday. We got a lot to get to. Vinny Goodwill from down the hall is here. My brother Vinny. And Vinny, let me ask you this off the top. What year did you first start doing TV? Like, you remember what year it was when you started doing television?
Like the first year I was doing it regularly or the first year that regularly,
hey, this is kind of what I do. Yeah, this is what
like
I do on a regular basis.
Like 2015. Yeah.
So that's almost 10 years ago. And I would think that in almost 10 years of doing television, you would know you can't come on TV with no clothes on. Right now, you have no clothes on. Right now, you are naked. This is not a skin flick. We're not that kind of, we're a family program. We're not in that type of film industry. And whatever you think you have on is not clothing. It's not clothing. That's inappropriate. It's inappropriate for television. Vinny Goodwill, for those listening on Sirius XM Channel 85, Vinny Goodwill has on some cloth. It's maize. I think it's maize. Is that what they call it? They call it maize.
Maize. It ain't scarlet.
Maize. Yeah. Maize and blue. Anyway, he's got a Michigan National Championship hoodie on. Anyway, I'm going to ignore it. It's not appropriate.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's pretty. It's so pretty, isn't it?
Well, isn't I would it? Hope
we
that.
We going sizzler. We going sizzler. Isn't that what this is? Isn't that pretty?
You know, I remember an old school journalism story. Old school. I guess one time Walter Cronkite went on the air. And he didn't have a jacket on, so he went on the air. He started talking, and somebody just kind of came on the set and threw a jacket over him. Somehow, I expect somebody to come from around the corner and just throw something over you, because that's obscene. We don't need to see that on a Monday morning. Anyway, Vinny, good to see you, despite what you're wearing. I want to ask you this, because I think you have a lot in common with the Minnesota Timberwolves in that... And I've listened to you talk about the NBA, and you make references to things that you haven't necessarily seen, but you have a knowledge of the NBA. And somebody might say, well, how is a guy who's not quite 40 years old, but close, not quite 40 years old, how does he know some of this stuff that happened when he was either not born or he was 3 or 4 years old? Maybe he's been here before. Maybe... there's something, he might be a prodigy, and it kind of goes against what is the prevalent expectation for somebody of a certain age. And that's why I think you and the Minnesota Timberwolves have something in common, because at 22 years old, you're not supposed to do what Anthony Edwards did in the series, what he did last night in a closeout game, Vinny, 40 points as they swept. They swept the Suns. The Suns haven't been swept in a 7-game series in 35 years. And the Timberwolves haven't won a first-round series or haven't won a series in nearly 20 years. And yet, here's Ant-Man, Anthony Edwards, doing his thing. First of all, I want us to hear from the Timberwolves, and then I want to get your take on what we saw here, especially last night in Phoenix.
Banks didn't play tonight?
Nah.
He played good for him.
Hey, that ain't our job to worry about that.
Let me just say, tonight he wasn't in foul trouble. Like, the first three games, the motherfuckers kept fouling. And tonight, I told him, what did I tell you last game?
He said, yo, can you find a way not to foul him? I said, I'm going to try
like
my
every,
best.
If you watch the game, every time in the third quarter when we would grow a lead, it's because he's in the game. Because they don't have a matchup for him. I'm like, Cat, we're not going to win game four if you foul. I told him yesterday, we're not going to win game four if you keep fouling. You keep fouling. And you see what he did in the third quarter. You see what he did in the fourth quarter. Like, he's like I always tell you, he's the best offensive player on the team. Like, if he's not in foul trouble, it's a problem for any team that got a guard, because he can stretch the floor. He can post. He can play off the catch. He can pass. I mean, like, he can do everything. So we just got to keep him from getting in foul trouble, man. He's going to be great every night.
Probably because I was trying to play more defense.
I mean, just stop
Yeah. Anthony, I think before that series, when people were trying to call you a young star, you said you don't want to hear that until you win in the playoffs. Are you able to give yourself a little bit more grace now in that regard?
Not yet.
He a young star. He over here talking like that. He the face of the league. I've been saying that. He hate when I say it, but it's true. Like I said, future so bright, I put the sunglasses on most of the time when I'm walking around with him.
Vinny, I mean, it's just good to see. It's good to hear. I mean, nobody has more fun than Anthony Edwards on the court, off the court. What'd you see on the court and off the court from the Minnesota Timberwolves, Vinny?
Man, that's a young American star, isn't it? Isn't that refreshing that you have an authentic American star now that we can sort of wrap our arms around, and he's not, you know, 35 years old, 40 years old, 37 years old. You know what I mean? Like, there is something fitting about what he's doing, Anthony Edwards. Like, just in that clip, you got to see all the authenticity of him. Did you notice that he empowered his teammate, Karl Towns, who's older? He poured into him while holding him accountable publicly and saying, hey, man, stop fouling. But doing it in such a way that didn't seem like emasculating. And then, you know, said, hey, I still got more work to do here. You know what I mean? Like, there was so much in that little morsel, that little, like, snapshot. It was almost like a guest verse on a rap song. And you're like, oh, this dude is coming. You know what I mean? Like, right. Oh, I've never heard this dude before. He's coming, right? He's here now. And I think it's high time that, you know, the phrase no country for old men, you know, Steph, he's sitting at the crib. I'm in Denver. LeBron is 48 minutes from sitting at the crib. Ant-Man put KD out. He's at the crib. It is a new day. And Anthony Edwards put up a 40 piece in a closeout game on the road. Like, that's one of those things where teams will say, you know what? We got game 5 at home. We can, you know, we can relax a little bit. Once they saw that Phoenix had nothing for them, like, there comes a point in every playoff series or a point in every game, Michael, where you realize not only are we the better team, but we can put these guys out of their misery. Like, that moment came some point in the third quarter yesterday where you're looking around and Phoenix is playing desperate basketball. They're diving on the floor. They're doing all these other things. And Minnesota is just scoring easy on the other end. And I think that was the point where Anthony Edwards said, you know what? Let me put these dudes out. And I don't think he got his first field goal until sometime late in the first quarter. Like, he didn't try to force the game, but when the game needed to be taken over, he took it over. And speaking of, like, somebody who hasn't been here before, doesn't he move like somebody we've seen before?
Yeah, he really does.
I'm not
does.
Saying he is, but he moves like that man. Like, we're not supposed to say his name. We don't speak on real G's.
I know.
But he moves like that man.
Yeah, moves like him. Same position. Both from
country.
The South.
Yep, country.
Yep, right. Yep. Both vertical. We can't even keep up with what that vertical is because they do some things. You go, wait a minute. That was not off a trampoline. That was just a dude jumping naturally over somebody else. It's amazing what we see from him at 22. And I guess, you know, I'm putting Minnesota in the same category as OKC, and I shouldn't do it. OKC is a legitimately young basketball team, average age of about 24.
Right.
Whereas Minnesota is a young-ish team, but Karl Anthony Towns has been around. Rudy Gobert has been around. We know Mike Conley has been all around everybody's block. But their star happens to be 22, and it's unusual to be led by a guy at that age who has never won a series before, but is doing those things you just talked about, Vinny, being able, up there, giving a press conference, and then, you know, not just talking about himself, deflecting, hey, I'm not ready yet, but hey, this guy right here is the best offensive player in the league, the best offensive player on the team, and if we can get him on the floor, we're going to be tough to beat. So they shouldn't know how to do this right now. He shouldn't know how to do it, but he does. On the flip side, I know, being raised the way you were and being raised the way I was, being raised in, especially in a black family, I know you have heard your parents say, you old enough to know better than this. You're old enough to know better than this. And that would be the Phoenix Suns.
Mm.
What? What was that? What was that? You got swept. I understand they're a better team. They swept you, Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. They, at least they showed up last night. Bradley Beal, that was Wizards. That was like Wizards on a Tuesday in January. I'm tired. Ain't nobody at our games. We had about 65% capacity. I'll go out there and give them a little bit. Then I'm done. I might even be done for a couple of weeks. That was an early vacation, Bradley Beal. And the thing is, Vinny, Bradley Beal's only 31. He moves. You want to talk about how somebody moves? He moves like he's 41. He just looks old and out of it and washed. I don't think he is. But he looks at it. And then this quote, I've never been swept. Dude, you're never in the playoffs. You haven't been swept. You a wizard. What you know about playoff history, wizard?
Gary Carter is yelling in the control room right now. He said, how's he catching? How is his Wizards catching all these strays? But to your point, and I thought about this yesterday, and I think I tweeted it, and I said, look, it's really hard for a team to be outquicked and to not have the size advantage. But that's the Phoenix Suns. That was them last night. They were not quicker to the loose balls, and Minnesota was bigger than them. And that's really hard to be in today's NBA in a playoff setting. They didn't have a point guard to set. You know, we talk about positionless basketball, right? That's the biggest myth I've ever heard. I don't know who started this nonsense, but it needs to end right now. Maybe it's the nerdification of basketball that we need to get back to some fundamentals and some basics. But you need a point guard. You need a point guard on the floor. You need a big on the floor who can protect the rim. Maybe those other three positions you can sort of interchange, the 2, 3, and 4, but you do need someone who can set the table. You can't ask Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker to go out there and create for themselves and not have somebody out there to create for them. You know what I mean? Like, that was just a bad roster put together from the jump. And teams don't, in today's NBA, there isn't this such thing as put super team together, we go to the finals. I can't remember the last time it happened. Maybe it's 2008, your Boston Celtics. Paul Pierce, you had Ray Allen, you had Kevin Garnett. Boom, you go to the finals. But those players naturally fit together in ways that when we see big threes or big whatevers, it's always a little more janky. It's always a little more awkwardly fitting. And they had a five.
That team had a five in Perkins. And they had a table setter that got guy who didn't want to shoot most of the time in Rondo.
Look, let's be perfectly honest here. Anybody could have played the five for the Boston Celtics in 2008, okay? I know we make people out to be, you know, much greater, much more valuable than what they are because of time passing by. Nah, dog. Anybody could have played the five for that team. They just needed a body. That's all. Could have been Michael Ola with candy. You know what I mean? Could have been Irvin Johnson, not Magic Johnson, Irvin Johnson. Irvin, you know what I mean? Irvin without the A. You know what I mean? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
But these teams don't naturally fit. And if I'm Kevin Durant, and I've struggled with this, I can't believe I'm going to say this, Michael Holly. Because I was the person that said Kevin Durant, baddest man on the planet. That was me. I said that, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that time is over. But I propose, Kevin Durant getting that old thing back. You ever look in the phone book or you look in your pictures, like you get a reminder, you can see some old pictures. You're like, man, things was really good with that one. That one was kind of fly. Maybe it was wrong place, wrong time. Right person, wrong time. You know what I mean?
Who are we talking about?
I think KD should call it one of his old things.
Which one?
I think KD. I mean, the most obvious one would be for him to call back to the Bay Area and get with those old dudes, right? Because I still think there's a natural kid. No, yeah, right? right? But I do think that a relationship out of convenience with both parties walking in with their eyes wide open, you know what I mean? I do think he's a better fit in Golden State now than he is in Phoenix with those guys. Because they're capped out. Listen. Think about it, Michael. They are capped out. They have nowhere to go. They're in a second apron tax world. And all these guys, as you get older in the NBA, as you get older, you become far more expensive. Just by function of rookie scale contracts, max deals, everything else, you make more money as you get older. That's why you see these old dudes hanging around. So if Golden State is content on being old, man, go on and bring that old thing back. They could do worse.
Wait a minute. Okay. Before I even take that on, let's hear from those old, ragged, finger-pointing already. Already. I mean, I just watched it. I felt like I just watched them last night. It hasn't been 24 hours. The game is not over. Hasn't been over for 24 hours. And yet, I keep hearing the name Frank Vogel already. I read like 3-4 stories today. Frank Vogel. All right, yeah. Frank. I know Devin Booker said, you need to be better. You might need to be better somewhere else because they already got your name in their mouth. All right, here are the ragged Phoenix Suns last night.
You mentioned the three of you needing to be better, coach needing to be better. Do you feel like you guys had enough roster-wise to win with this group?
Yeah, roster-wise, you know, everybody talks about the firepower, but, you know, you look around the league, it comes down to the details. I don't want to keep saying that, but it's a super important thing. You can't just go out there and think you're going to win off talent. You know, the game is more complicated than that.
What's kind of the level of motivation going into next season?
For me? Individually? I live and breathe this shit, bro. Like, I have nothing else, but, like, you know, at this point in my life, I got a lot of shit going on outside of basketball, but what I'm mainly focused on is ball, bro. So, like, yeah, I got motivation. I love to play. I'm going to come back next year, you know, ready to hoop, you know. So, yeah, I don't think you should question that.
He said, me, individually. We know KD loves the ball. Got it. Okay, so I'm not really worried about KD's commitment to the game. I think the questioner, maybe, you know, KD took it to mean something that the questioner wasn't really trying to get at. He was just trying to get the conversation started, I think. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But Devin Booker, Vinny, Devin Booker saying details. He said, I want to keep saying it. The suggestion being that you've said it a lot. And if you're talking about details, once again, it comes back to who? Comes back to the coach. Doesn't it come back to the coach? You say, we got to get to details. You can't just throw the talent out there. Details. Yes, the players have to execute. The players have to listen and know their assignments. But anytime you say a team is sloppy, a team is not disciplined, a team does not take care of the finer points of the game, ultimately, in the NBA especially, with a team constructed like the Phoenix Suns, where many, they can't trade first-round picks. They can trade their first-round pick this year. That'd be dumb if they did it, but they can trade the first-round pick this year. They can trade their first-round pick in 2031. What? Yeah, 2031. They don't have second-round picks. They traded all their second-round picks to get Bradley Beal. Oh, and then they got pick swaps with the Wizards again for Bradley Beal. They went all in. Look at this. No first round picks until 2030. No second round picks until 2030. What the hell? Hey, Kevin Durant, you ain't going nowhere. You ain't going nowhere. You're not going to Golden State. No. They don't want you. They don't want this financial problem. They're stuck. What to do, Vinny, if you're the general manager of the Phoenix Suns?
Well, it's clear that Frank Vogel's going to walk the plank, right? And maybe he will. Maybe he will. Maybe yeah. He should. One thing about it is none of these dudes like their coaches, right? I don't know what Coach LeBron has ever liked. You know what I mean? Kevin Durant has never really liked the coach. And to be fair, Kevin Durant had to endure nearly 10 years of Scott Brooks, who I'm not sure he can coach his way out of a paper bag, right? Really nice guy, but not sure if he's a championship coach. And then he had to endure Steve Nash, who also we're not sure is a coach or a really good coach. So it's a little both sides on that end. And you talk about the details. What the hell does that mean? Does that mean that you should be coached better, that the intricate details need to be drilled down and all those things? It also means players have to be a little bit more flexible. If Frank Vogel is saying, hey, when we take 43s, we're a pretty good team, but they only take 43s 10 times during the regular season, and I'm not a person who's all into the three-point revolution, but three is greater than two. And if you got Devin Booker and Kevin Durant on your team, two of the best mid-range shooters, not only in the league today, but probably in this league's history, they got to be a little bit more flexible too. So yeah. It's not just Frank Vogel walking a plank. It's about sometimes the weird thing is this, that I don't know if people really, really get. And this is where, the historian in me comes in. Michael Jordan resisted the triangle offense. It was not the greatest usage of his individual talent. Mike wanted to cook. You know what I mean? Mike wanted to cook and go down the lane and dunk on you. The triangle offense was a lot more simplified. It became a tool of efficiency for other players. It was actually the better offense for the role players than it was for Michael Jordan. Isaiah Thomas played in a system that was more geared towards Bill Laimbeer and James Edwards and Joe Dumars and all those other type of players because he liked to play run and gun. Like, that was his style. Now, Magic Johnson and Showtime, a different ball game. And Stephen Curry is playing in a perfect system. But most times, you have to subjugate your game for the betterment of the team in terms of system and in the terms of structure. And I'm not sure in today's game, today's players, because of maybe it's the implementation of, you know, efficiency and usage and all those things, which says, let's have our best player do all the things that he does well all the time. In essence, that winds up drowning out the other players who you're going to need. And it needs to be a little bit more sacrifice. And even with LeBron, and I know you love LeBron, you might think LeBron's the GOAT and all that. One reason I think LeBron struggles a little bit is because he is the system, as opposed to him sort of subjugating himself into a system. And I think that's one of those things that kind of slows him down.
Well, speaking of systems, let's talk about a system where you don't really score that many points in a game. You score 97 points in a game. Your team does. And you score more than half of those 97, about half of those 97. Now, you put up 47 of 97. And that was what Jalen Brunson did yesterday in New York. Excuse me, yesterday in Philly. I thought I was in New York. You thought you were in New York. Yeah. No, what? Yeah. What? Wait a minute. Where are we? Oh, this is Philadelphia. We're in Philly. It sounded like New York. It was actually Philly. And it sounds like bing, bing, that Liberty Bell has already cracked. Bing, bing, bing. Crack it some more because you're down 1-3 from Philly's perspective and you're actually going to the real New York facing playoff elimination. Let's hear from the Knicks and Philly and then let's talk about the Knicks and Philly.
I'm not gonna lie, this Philadelphia fan base is I said this before, but they're very relentless and so very passionate. I mean, I'm an Eagles fan, I would know, but seeing the Knicks here and hearing the Knicks here was pretty cool, and it's awesome.
Disappointing. You know, I love our fans. Think he's unfortunate, and I'm not calling them out, but it is disappointing. You know, obviously, you got a lot of Knicks fans, and they're down the road, and never seen it. And I've been here for 10 years. Kind of pisses me off, especially because Philly is considered a sports town. So, you know, they've always shown up, and I don't think that should happen. It's not okay.
They took everything from you. They took everything. And then they kicked it in your living room. They kicked it all the entire game. They were shouting down the Philly fans. You can see them out there. You can see them in the concourse at post game. Look at them having a good time. And, you know, Joel Embiid is calling out. He is. He says, I'm not calling out the fans, which means he is calling out the fans.
Right.
But what are they supposed to do? What are you supposed to do, Vinny? Hey, the Sixers, I'll get The only excuse the Sixers have is they should have won game, had game two robbed. They were robbed. They had game two taken from them by the officials. But, okay, that's game two. Now we're on to game five. What you going to do? They haven't done anything. They haven't done enough to get the fans so excited and to shut up the New York fans. What do you see in this series?
I know who they're going to blame. You know who they're going to blame? You know who they're going to blame, yeah. Michael Holly? They so mad. Philly is so mad and disappointed right now. You know what they're going to do? They're going to fire Doc Rivers. That's what's going to happen. They're going to fire Doc. They're going to blame Doc. It's Doc's fault, right? That's whose fault it is. Because you're running out of or Ben scapegoats.
Simmons. Maybe Ben Simmons, too.
Maybe Ben Simmons, James Harden. Just run down the list. Brett Brown. Like, my group chat, I had a group chat just some friends, and they were just all running down the names of people that Philly was going to blame yesterday. And none of these dudes are employed by the Philadelphia 76ers anymore. You know, like, you're running – you are reaching – playoff Wizards, like if we were talking about the Washington Wizards.
We are crushing the Wizards today. Gary Carter.
I know, right?
I'm sorry.
I know, right?
I'm sorry, not sorry.
Like, Michael.
So good.
Michael, the thing that gets me, Joel Embiid has this 15-footer, and instead of driving down the lane and dunking it uncontested, he tries to take a Euro step into Precious Achiuwa. I can't figure out why he would. Like, Philly did not play smart yesterday. And to me, I thought Nick Nurse was supposed to be one of these coaches that everybody said was the genius.
I heard about him.
He boy genius, coach of the year. You know, he won a championship. You know, innovative, all these things. Hey, that was a dude that was running boxing one in the NBA Finals. That one didn't seem genius to me. And your team has collective breakdowns. You say the game two was stolen from them. I'm trying to figure out why they didn't call a timeout. And not just from the standpoint of coaching, but you coach players to think for themselves, right? There's some coaches. There's coaches and there's teachers, right? Coaches show you how to deal with things like puppets, right? This is how you do things. Teachers show you how to think for yourselves in moments where you cannot look and rely on the sidelines. Philly does not look like a team that's well coached or well taught right now. You know what I mean? They don't. And the Knicks, at least they're well coached.
Yeah. Oh, we know that. Oh, definitely. No, nobody's ever questioned that about a Tom Thibodeau team. Oh, yeah. Well coached, always. And sometimes too well coached, where teams at this time, you know, on the doorstep of May, be like, dude, our legs, we're tired. You demand too much all the time. We need a little vacation. If you're not going to give us a vacation like daily, let's bring in like a siesta where we just like we can just go away for a few hours. You just hover too much. But they are well coached. The Knicks are. The Sixers, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what they're going to do. I think they're going to have to come back and do something that maybe it's uncomfortable for the city collectively. You know, you hear the MVP chants for Embiid, MVP. And then,
I thought they were chanting that for Jalen Brunson yesterday because Knicks fans came in there and stomped on their couch.
Yeah.
That's what that was.
Yeah. Yeah, F your couch. That's what they did yesterday. Look, we've heard, you mentioned Doc, Ben Simmons, Brett Brown, James Harden. Daryl Morey has been a guy who has taken some criticism and has been under scrutiny in Philadelphia. But how about Embiid?
As he should. Yes.
How about Embiid, though? MVP of the league. And I know there are injuries. I know he's had injuries. My man's never been to the conference finals, though. And he did say after game two, we're the better team. We're the better team. We'll figure this out. I don't see it happening. But by the way, help me out with this. Can I give you a homework assignment?
Of course, please.
Okay. I don't know if I've ever seen a stat like this in a regular season game. Josh Hart, has this ever happened? Josh Hart yesterday, 0 for 7. 0 for 7 from the field, 0 for 3 from three-point range. 17 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 points. Throwing some block shots too. Okay. I have never seen a stat line like this from a, I don't know, am I impressed? Am I repulsed?
You should be. You should be
a little
impressed.
Bit of both. A little bit of both.
No, don't be repulsed.
Intrigued.
Don't be repulsed. This is playoff basketball, man.
This is
the
amazing.
Playoff basketball that basketball that we grew up watching, Michael Holly. This is the playoff basketball that we loved because in today's game, if you can't score, you can't be on the floor. You can't you don't have value if you can't put the ball in the basket. And Josh Hart, who hit 4 threes in 3 straight games, which was also a Knicks record in the postseason, came up completely empty but found himself being completely useful in a game that I hate saying the cliche, the Knicks wanted it more, because that feels like the easy thing to say when you don't really know what to say. You can't really quantify why a team beat another team. The Knicks flat out wanted it more. Like, they went after rebounds. They went after loose balls. They sensed somewhere in the third quarter of that game, oh, man, Philly ain't that good. Let's beat this team. They might have been down 10, and they were like, we're not playing that well, but these guys ain't that good. So I do think that there is something to, you know, the Knicks' magic and everything else, and there is something to a team being tougher than you, team being better than you. And yeah, Embiid is hurt. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. He's out there playing gamely. I think sometimes the problem with that is because he does not have the equity from before, the equity of coming through in big time playoff situations, you're not going to necessarily get grace here. And because it looks like you're compiling a Draymond Green-like rap sheet of being in the wrong place at the wrong time all the time, yeah. In terms
all
of
the time.
Limbs, arms and limbs of other it's players. Always.
Yeah. Why does this always happen to you? Right?
Why are you always there? Why are you always there?
Why is your hand, your foot, your elbow, your knee always in the wrong place at the wrong time? Could it be you?
I'm not saying he's dirty.
But he does some dirty things. How about that? Is he a flat-out dirty player? No, he does some dirty things. He does. You have to say that. Now, in the interest of time, I want to talk to Mike Jones. We're going to talk to Mike Jones about football. So this is perfect because I was going to talk about Milwaukee and Indiana. What's the point? Next, let me slide. I'm going to slide that over. I don't want to talk about them. I want to talk about these fake Bucks, the fake Bucks. I was watching, texting Natalie and Gary yesterday during the game. I said, you know what Milwaukee looks like? Milwaukee looks like the Bulls with no athleticism or youth. When Giannis is not out there, Giannis is not there and no Dame, they look like the Bulls, but not as interesting. The Bulls, but not as fast and as spry. I mean, like, dude, Indiana should have won. Indiana did not play great yesterday. They finally figured it out. Indiana should have won that game by 40 points. I'm like, who am I afraid of? Like, Middleton did everything he could. Am I afraid of anybody on the Milwaukee Bucks? Oh, just a mess. Go home. Go die at home, Bucks. We can put you up on the wall and say, hey, remember 2023-24? It didn't turn out to be the way we thought it would. We thought we'd get a championship, not so much. Now, let's talk about the Clippers and quickly talk about the Clippers and the Mavericks. My Clippers! Woo! I don't know if you heard the slander I was putting out on Luka, saying I'm not fearful of Luka and they can't get by the Clippers. They played them 3 times in the last. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm not fearful. No, yeah, you go ahead, turn up your face if you want. Let's see, Luka. I remember that one year he lost in the first round to the Clippers. Then I remember that next year he lost in the first round to the Clippers. Then the one year they quit down the stretch, that's last year, and didn't make the playoffs. They quit. They took the last 2 games off and won, 35 games last year, whatever it was. Then they got to the conference finals. And now, without Kawhi playing – They're at the crib. There's no Kawhi. They're up 2-1. They could just eliminate these pesky Clippers. They lose. And here we are, 2-2. No, I'm not afraid. Tell me why I should be afraid, because I just gave you a resume that seems pretty light, if you ask me, Vinny. You go.
I mean, you just, you're like kind of blowing the lead, right? You know what I mean? Like, you're missing the lead. Like, the fact that A, going down 31, B, coming back from 31, the shot making from Kyrie Irving yesterday, maybe perhaps the greatest finisher under, you know, under the rim that we've ever seen, with apologies to Steph Curry, apologies to Rod Strickland, apologies to Isaiah Thomas. Kyrie Irving might be the most... They're in the quote-unquote Mount Rushmore, or they're in the, you know, the upper room, so to speak. It's those guys there. I think Kyrie might be the most creative of them all. I've never seen anybody finish over three dudes like that, like he finished yesterday. But yeah, there. Look, Luka A doesn't look completely healthy, but he always looks like he's dragging a leg around or something like that. I wouldn't say that this series is over. I wouldn't even say that Dallas blew their opportunity to win this series. I think they can still win another game on the road in LA.
They can.
I don't think this is out of their hands. This is a 2-2 series between 4-5 seeds. This is what it's supposed to look like. The shot making yesterday, Paul George shooting from damn near behind the backboard. James Harden.
Love it.
Floating you to death. You know, look, the floaters. Float on. He was on it yesterday. Like, he
my
gets
name is
all
James.
The credit. I'm going to
my name is James. I'm a Scorpio.
Right. I think we should be giving credit to the Clippers for showing some gumption yesterday.
Yes.
More gumption than we thought they had, because a lot of people thought that they were gutless. And they're not gutless. They have a competitive character. And I know we want to bag on the Milwaukee Bucks, but I felt like the Bucks yesterday acquitted themselves with effort. Like, they didn't play well in terms of, like, efficient. But they hung around in that game a lot longer than they should have. And I know there's a segment of people, and they might even be in a control room, who are just waiting for the Bucks to lose so the fallout can begin. I can't figure out why there's such an appetite for that. You know what I mean? You had no problem with Giannis. I got no problem with Dame. Doc Rivers is Doc Rivers, but this ain't his fault. You know
not
what I mean?
Fault.
Like, this is
not
actually
his fault. And
not
you know why?
Doc Rivers' fault.
You know why I know that? Because he already told me. He told me in week one. He told me as soon as he got the job. Hey, you know, we're like, listen, we don't got time to practice. Hey, I wasn't trying to get this job. Adrian did a great job. I didn't take his job. But hey, listen, you know, travel, our support staff, it's not my fault. I got you. Hey, look, I just wanted to.
I mean, Dolph protests too much. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, constantly. He got a bag full of them, a bag full of excuses, but we'll see. Anyway, I want to talk to Mike Jones. Let's take a break and talk about how Detroit hosted the NFL World. Great job, Detroit. The draft was this weekend, and you want to talk about a shocker. There's a team that did really well in the NFL draft, really well. And we usually don't talk about them in these tones. With this tone of voice, I usually don't say positive things about this team that did well in the NFL draft, Mike Jones. I'm going to see if he shares my opinion. All right, Vinny, I told you we wanted to talk with Mike Jones, one of the best NFL writers in the country. And Mike, you're covering the NFL draft in Vinny's hometown, Detroit, Michigan. Detroit did a great job. I think the NFL, by the way, I have to give the NFL credit, moving the draft around is a smart idea. We've seen it in Cleveland. We saw it a couple of years ago in Vegas. Moving the draft, like the draft in Detroit, it is really, you look at that, almost a million people, 775,000 people attending the draft, attending basically roll call. If you want to simplify it, the draft is roll call, but I love it. You love it, Mike. And I was saying that there was a team that did very well in the NFL draft, at least strategically, logically. It looks like they actually knew what they were doing. and that would be the Washington Commanders. What did you think? I know you covered this team for the Washington Post. What did you think of what the Commanders did this weekend?
It was nice to see a draft unfold where adults were running the show and not, you know, a little rich kid pulling the strings and interfering and dabbling and messing with the plans of his general manager and his head coach. I thought that Adam Peters and Dan Quinn and their staff did a really good job of getting their franchise quarterback and then getting pieces to the puzzle that they really need that can support him. They did a really good job of finding value picks. And so, yeah, you know, everything's got to come together on the field, but there wasn't that feeling. And I talked to a lot of Washington fans who were like, yeah, you know, we had RG3 and then things went bad, you know, and you were kind of wondering, okay, how much longer, when was Snyder going to sabotage things? Well, that feeling's gone because the general manager is running the show. The head coach is working with him. There's not the meddlesome owner. And so maybe, just maybe, these draft picks might pan out.
Well, you said maybe, just maybe, they might pan out. And Benny, I want to hear your take on it. But before you give me your thoughts on the Commanders and their draft picks, I want to hear from the franchise quarterback. The last time I took a guy number 2 overall was RG3. Here we go with Jaden Daniels out of LSU. Here's Jaden Daniels, the new quarterback for the Washington Commanders.
What I loved about Adam's press conference last night, what he liked about you, he says you take the soul away from a defense. In your perspective, what does that look like when Jaden Daniels takes the soul away from a defense?
2023 Florida game.
Can you elaborate?
Just turn on the tape and watch that game.
Oh, wait a minute. Hey, Vinny, they got a dude. They got a dude. He's talking trash too. What did you see from, I know it's just a draft day and we know it. We're giving people grades in April. We haven't seen mini camp. We haven't seen training camp, a single preseason game, but all those qualifiers aside, what did you see from the Commanders and other teams this weekend?
Well, the fact that they took the pick that was in front of them, they didn't try to galaxy brain it. And in the second round, they did take Mike Samerstill from the University of Michigan, a guy who Nick Saban said was the best and most complete football player in the draft. That's pretty high praise from a dude who, you know, let's be honest, Mikey Samerstill in the Michigan Wolverines put out Alabama in the Rose Bowl not too long ago. So there could be some hurt feelings there, but Nick was pretty spot on there. Now, Mike Jones, I want to stay in your division, right? I want to stay in the NFC East because the New York Football Giants, they got a quarterback that's on an ACL. They got a quarterback who we're not even sure is actually good. Did they take a quarterback?
No, I think we know. I think we know he's not.
Right. Okay. We know that he's not good. Talk to me like I'm 5, right? Explain this to me like I'm 5. Right. Talk to me like don't even explain it to me like I'm 5. Talk to me like I'm like something's wrong with me. Make me understand why the Giants didn't take a quarterback.
Well, a number of years ago, when Daniel Jones was going to be drafted, when they took him, they reached on him and the table wasn't set. So he didn't have enough dudes around him to help elevate his game. He had Saquon Barkley. And then we saw what happened, you know, when Saquon was hurt, pressure on Daniel Jones, not there. So they know, I believe, that they need a quarterback. But they also know that their cupboard is pretty bare. So yes, if I were them, I would have wanted to pull the trigger on a quarterback right there. But I think because they were not able to get up to number 3 and get Drake May, they were like, okay, look, we're not going to reach on another quarterback. We need playmakers. We need help on our defense. We need help in so many areas. Let's just take the best players available. This is Daniel Jones' last shot. He's coming off an ACL, yes. We also have Drew Locke that showed a little bit of promise right there. So maybe he can help, you know, keep us competitive, at least halfway respectable, while we assemble talent. And then if Daniel Jones is not the guy, if he does not rebound, which it looks pretty bleak thinking that he can, because this guy has never thrown more than 15 touchdown passes in a season. That is not a franchise quarterback. So then we can go next year and get a quarterback once our reinforcements, once everything around him is in better shape. They're not making the same mistake twice, basically.
You know, I want to get your take on quarterbacks. You mentioned reaching for quarterbacks, and I guess a skeptic can say a lot of teams did that this year. Six of the first 12 picks were quarterbacks. And I've heard, and I've read this a lot, and I've heard people say, well, you know, all these guys aren't going to be good. Just the numbers say that someone, there's going to be a bust. But I go back to, like, so they used 2021. In 2021, five quarterbacks in the first 15, and out of those five, four have already moved on to another team. But the year before, Mike, yeah, Joe Burrow, pretty good.
Yes.
Justin Herbert, pretty good. Tua Tagovailoa, pretty good. And Jordan Love, who sat behind Aaron Rodgers. That's in 2020. That's four first-round quarterbacks. All of them are good quarterbacks. Now, you can argue about how good is Tua really. Like, I don't care. Those are four good quarterbacks. This year, these six, tell me who you like. Tell me who you would have, you know, maybe stayed away from.
Okay. Obviously, I like Caleb Williams. You know, supposedly a generational talent. He does seem like he has all the skills, everything it takes. I like what they are assembling around him. So he has a chance to succeed. We'll see what Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, can do to build an offense around him. Jaden Daniels, I like him. I like what they're putting around him. Drake May, I hear different things from NFL talent evaluators, you know, when they talk about him. Some say he's going to wind up being the best of the whole bunch. Other guys think he's just going to be, you know, a decent quarterback. J.J. McCarthy, I don't know. I hear that he's just going to be a guy. Now, look, he comes from, you know, championship pedigree, but I do think that he's in a system that will take advantage of what he does well. They believe in running the football, the play action attack. He's got talent around him. Will he be a guy that's going to take over games? Probably not. But if you can run the football, if you can take care of the football, you can play defense, he'll put you in position. Not that much different than the guy that he's replacing in Kirk Cousins right there. Now, Michael Penix Jr., I think he's got a lot of great ability. But eighth overall, I don't know. And also, he's going to sit for a while behind Kirk Cousins. That's the one that I felt like was a reach. Also think that Bo Nix was a reach. Now, I think Michael Penix Jr. can wind up being good. But again, situation where you're sitting for a long time, he's going to be 28 by the time Kirk Cousins' contract is over. Maybe Kirk Cousins doesn't see the end of that contract. Maybe it's 2 years and then you move him in. They're hoping they're doing the Jordan Love, you know, Aaron Rodgers type of thing here. But we'll see. But yeah, Bo Nix, probably think he was a reach. He's just, I think he is going to be disappointing. And JJ might just be an okay guy.
You know, it's funny. That was the first time I'd seen Michael Penix Jr.'s actual hair. He was always in a do-rag. Every time I saw him, was in a do-rag. I thought he might have been like doing the LeBron wearing a do-rag with no hair under it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just glad the brother has hair. Never mind, because I'm looking at the symmetry of the screen.
Hey, and man, I'm sorry.
I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it like that. Right. No, I didn't mean it like that. Now, last thing for me, Michael, because I wasn't in Detroit. I'm on the road for the NBA playoffs. Describe that to me. Describe Detroit to me as a draft city. Like, I saw the numbers over the three-day period, 775,000. You know, a lot of people coming in from out of town. Like, the event that this has become. Like, talk to me about Detroit as a host city for that.
You know, I was not there at the draft live. Oh. But, you know, I asked a lot of people, like, look, Detroit, don't sleep on Detroit. Detroit is a sports-crazed city. And this just goes to speak to also, like you said, a lot of people came from out of town. This just goes to show just the NFL is just undefeated. They just turned this event, which was, you know, beloved and well, you know, attended and watched in New York City for, you know, since the 60s. And they turned it into a traveling show, and it's becoming more and more popular. And like 98% of the people there could not even see the stage and don't know the names of half the players or anything about half the players that were drafted, but it's just the symbol of hope. And it's like Christmas Day. Fans just wanted to be there, be a part of it. And look, you see the people all crammed there, but from all accounts, Detroit did a great job of hosting the way they had things set up for fan entertainment and everything like that. You know, a lot of people heard Detroit and they're kind of like, that's not really a destination. I know some players didn't go because it's Detroit, but the NFL finds a way. They are undefeated, the almighty professional football league.
Now, here's my last one. And I'm thinking, if you're Philadelphia and Howie Roseman, okay, this is what you do. They like a lot of action. Draft day is a party for them, too. They usually announce big deals on draft day. They traded for A.J. Brown on draft day. They signed A.J. Brown to an extension on draft day. And then throughout the weekend, they made a record amount of deals. I think 8 trades, the most trades in over 30 years on draft day. And I think if you're an Eagles fan, you're excited. I bet you one person in Philly is not excited. He's the head coach, Nick Sirianni. Because they have left him, Mike, with no excuses. Mm-hmm. I mean, they got him a new OC, new DC. They got the best corner in the draft. They got the best corner / safety in the draft. They were doing all sorts of things. It's the pressure now on Nick Sirianni to not only get to the playoffs and be successful, but to get through September. I mean, I can imagine like a quick stumble. Nick Sirianni could be out of a job, man. Like, look at what they've done here.
No, I mean, look, the pressure was on him anyway. He knew as soon as the season ended. That's why he fired his offensive coordinator and fired his defensive coordinator. The offensive coordinator, Brian Johnson, didn't even get a fair shake because he was supposed to be grooming and developing him, and then he became the scapegoat. So Nick Sirianni knows that he has to bring it this year. They have to bounce back. That getting to the Super Bowl 2 years ago is not enough to give him the goodwill. So, yeah, look, all the excuses are gone. You have your quarterback. You have an offensive line that you got, you know, young talent to go on there to plug in. You have an offensive coordinator who believes in running the football and supporting his quarterback. You got Saquon Barkley. They've got a defense that has reloaded. They've got a blend of young talent they've been developing over the last couple of years, free agents and everything. And then they have this draft that's bolstered. And then if you're Howie Roseman, you're like, okay, we got a lot of picks for this year, but we're also making sure we've got 9 picks for next year too. So yes, Nick Sirianni's got to get the job done this year, because if not, the Eagles will probably pull the plug on that, but they are well positioned to continue to revamp, reload. And also this, remember the investigation about tampering for Saquon Barkley, and who knows, they might get docked a pick or two, but
yeah.
Howie Roseman made sure, hey, if I lose a pick or two, it's okay because I got 6, 7, 8, 9 more. So he's in position. Not only he got great value this year, but he's lined up for next year, and that's why they keep on revamping, remaking themselves, and remaining competitive.
Mike Jones, you are more than competitive. You're one of the best, man. We appreciate you. Thanks for taking the time, brother.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Good to see you.
Appreciate you, Mike.
Yeah, Vinny, over the weekend, I was a little surprised. I shouldn't have been that surprised, but still surprised, I guess, a little bummed, but happy for Candace Parker with the announcement that she is going to retire. And she says, it's time for this to happen. And I gotta have some words about Candace Parker, because as I told people, we were going through the NCAA tournament and everyone talked about the record ratings for the NCAA tournament and the moment that we're experiencing, not only in college basketball and the WNBA. I just thought it was important to remind people that this is a league that is not new, the W. This is a league that has its own goats. This league has a history. It has stars. And Candace Parker is one of those stars who came into the league as a rookie and started dominating immediately, who won championships in multiple places, who's been an MVP of the league. You look at the records there. Went back to her hometown in Chicago and won a championship there. Nobody expected that to happen. So I'm just glad to see her. She has done everything you could possibly do in this game. Olympian, Defensive Player of the Year, won in college, won in the pros. And she's winning in this space right now because I enjoy watching her and listening to her as part of NBA broadcast. She's a hell of a broadcaster as well. So Candace Parker, thank you for everything that you've done for basketball on the court and basketball in the media space as well.
Look, there's goats of particular eras when you come to women's basketball. Like there's the Cheryl Miller era, and then there's the Cheryl Swoops era. And then there's the Candace Parker era that I think it goes undersold that she came into the league as the Rookie of the Year and the MVP. Like those things don't happen in professional sports. It kind of goes a little undertold. But I don't know if we know a life in terms of a media life, in terms of how we see the W without having Candace Parker in the league. Like she's been in the league, not just for so long, but she's been a dominant part of the conversation for so long that even though you're going to have the new ones, the Caitlin Clark, the Juju Watkins, you know, the Paige Beckers, Candace Parker was going to be right there with them, still being able to compete and still being part of the conversation. Now she's going to be leading the conversation as opposed to being the topic of the conversation. But man, she has such a decorated career and was universally respected. Like you, when you talk to other ball players, you talk to male ball players about Candace Parker, like the respect, the admiration comes out. So, nah, man, she's one of them, one of the few. She's one of them.
Yeah, no question. So Candace Parker, career is ending on the court, but we know, you know, there's always something with her. I mean, whatever she gets into, you know, it's going to be excellent. So, hey, Candace Parker, I'll salute that champion, the three-time WNBA champion, Candace Parker, and then you just wearing the shirt of a one-time champion, Michigan Wolverine. You just won one. Just won
just one,
one in the 21st
just
century.
Just one?
Just one.
Just one?
I mean, this okay. century. Right. This century.
Oh, okay. Just making sure.
And,
just making sure.
And you know.
Proper etiquette.
And it's,
proper etiquette.
It's fitting.
You watch your tone. You watch your
it's
tone.
It's fitting. I'm just stating facts. They go 15-0, and now they're in trouble. Now they're going on probation.
Oh,
and at least
like
win the right way.
That's like joining Ohio State in detention. Welcome.
Hey, listen, we know who we are. We know who we are. We never claim to be anything else. But you're supposed to be one of the best schools in the country. It's supposed
brightest
to be about
and
the
best.
Academy.
Leaders and best. Leaders and best, baby. Don't you forget it.
Good to see you, Vinny. Take care.
You too, brother. You too, brother.